Andre, let's start with Putin's visit to North Korea and right after that to Vietnam. How did you find it and how important is this? We know that they were talking about some strategic agreements between the two countries.
Oh, it's a complete power shift in the region. South Korea already reacted, They reacted by means of like, oh yeah, we're gonna remove our moratorium on supplying the little aid to Ukraine. Sure, whatever. The problem, of course, now that Vladimir Putin was absolutely clear today and yesterday that if need be, Russia will arm North Korea with all required weapons. And I think so, it's already happened. Vladimir Putin basically was talking about fait accompli. And when we talk about what type of the weapons, I mean, North Korea develops its own, program, but those will be not of the strategic nature. Those will be primarily of the something like land attack missiles of the Kalibr family, like 3M14. And of course, Onyx missiles with a range of 800 kilometers. 3M14 has 2,500 kilometers. And it's not only a range. I believe Koreans try to create something similar. They don't have this type of the range. And of course, they don't have the accuracy and targeting required. Well, now they have it, most likely. And that puts immediately every single US naval base within the range. In the area, it definitely makes war, God forbids, if something is being will be decided to be launched by the United States, Gulf of Tonkin, all kinds of things, because that's how they think in Pentagon and in Washington due to military illiteracy. But the point is that South Korea and especially those 83 bases and which United States has up to 83 bases, including some large ones, and it keeps their 28,000 people. God forbid the war starts. Conventionally, North Korea will be able to actually strike with high precision, not just Seoul. They have artillery and long-range artillery already, kind of, have Seoul in the crosshair, but every single US base will get it, and as you might expect, it's not going to look good. So, well, that's the massive geopolitical shift. And that also probably China is really kind of rubbing its hands, joyfully too. So that's what it is. Vietnam is a traditional ally of it was in Soviet times. Obviously, they still warmly remember Russians. Many Vietnamese speak Russian. And obviously, they remember the help Soviet Union provided during the Vietnam War. So it's a, it's just probably getting relations back on track, which were actually the allied relations. And one of the things which I think it was on agenda, I'm pretty sure it was, but we will need to see the readouts. And of course, some things will be pretty much secret, classified. But I think so. Russians definitely had the revitalization of the Kamrang naval base, which was during the Cold War major naval base for the actually the Soviet Navy, Pacific Fleet. So that obviously adds to the weight which Russia begins to project in the area, and it actually adds to the stability.
Yeah. When it comes to the North Korea, we know that for a long time they have been under tremendous sanctions. They are right now, it seems that Russia is supporting them militarily, and what's much important for them would be an economic relief for them. How do you see this? Do you think that these countries like North Korea, we have the same situation in Cuba as well. We had the confrontation of the United States and Russia in Cuba. And right now in North Korea, these two countries have been destroyed by this regime of sanctions for many years. That's why I think these new changes that are happening in the world is so much important for the development of these countries.
You are exactly right. And it will come to long-suffering people of North Korea, especially in 90s and early 2000s. Great relief, because you have this, well, it's huge Russian economy, and suddenly Russia goes out, breaks those shackles of this pretense. So that means Russia just simply in last 2 days broke the shackles of the American economic sanctions and Western economic sanctions. And now, there will be a lot of positive development in North Korea economy-wise, and that will certainly improve their standard of living. And I think so, considering where they were, it's going to improve it dramatically, actually. So, and as for Cuba, I don't know. I mean, you see, Korea is very close. It's obviously Russia's, neighbor. So, in this respect, it's much easier to conduct all kinds of trade and economic development in Korea, which I'm pretty sure Russia will get access to. And Korea has some very substantial resources, mineral resources, and things of this nature. Cuba is different, of course. It's not because of their, being near to the United States, but because also you have to consider the what is called in Russian transport shoulder, and there's not much you can get, in terms of Cuba, in terms of valuables, so to speak, to go and develop there, because obviously it has some oil. I believe, obviously, and primarily the Soviet Union was keeping this artificial imports from Cuba during the Cold War, which have been rum, cigars, things of this nature. You can easily buy in Soviet times, just any, go to any newspaper stand, they would sell you, Cuban cigars, which of course are extremely valuable in the United States. But what else? I don't know, but there will be something, I think. But obviously, for North Korea, it's a huge deal. And we cannot even overstate how important it will be for economic development of the North Korea. That means better jobs, better technologies, better standard of living.
Andre, when it comes to the Soviet Union, many people are trying to demonize everything that was belonging to Soviet Union. I think that's a huge mistake if we do that, because we know that they were helping many people, specifically in Africa, Vietnamese. They just helping them just to get out of that difficulties that those difficulties that they had in those days. And right now it seems that Russia today understands the role of Soviet Union in those days and tries to do what was right in those days that Soviets were doing the way they were doing.
If Leonid Ilyich Brezhnev would have been alive today, and he would have listened to Vladimir Putin or Sergei Lavrov, he would say, "Hey, there should be communists, because they talk about anti-colonial, movements, helping developing countries and things of this nature." Yes, it's basically going back to historically where Russia was. Russia was also a funny empire, in many respects. But the point is that, yeah, the Soviet Union did it, and Russia comes into Africa, let's say, and everywhere, and say, "Hey, you know what? Let's trade and let's do this. We get to develop these resources, you get this good cut, plus we build you, some hydroelectric dam, nuclear power station, we provide you education." And again, Russia still has РУДН, which is called Российский университет дружбы народов, which is Russian University of the Friendship of People, which was famous, Patrice Lumumba Institute during the Soviet times, which prepared truckload of the specialists for countries such in Africa and elsewhere. Well, guess what? In my Naval Academy, we had the elements of the basically naval cadet groups from Vietnam. That is why, for example, many people in the Vietnamese Navy became a graduate of our Naval Academy. We had Cubans, we had the whole host of Arab countries, ranging from Libya to Algeria. Alger was a huge deal. So yeah, you look at this, it's just, and suddenly it's back to what it was, the historic track. And Russian, so to speak, expansion is dramatically different from the expansion of the Western countries. As one of the leaders of Africa a couple of years ago in the during the All African Congress in St. Petersburg, I believe it was 2022, he came out. You can find it, it's on YouTube, and he said, you know what? Russians were the first people who came to us and they treated us as is equal. There you go. It doesn't take much, you know, sometimes to convince people that, yeah, you mean the good business for them and for yourself. And people appreciate this.
I think these days, these months, these years, recent years are so important for the mindset of a Russian, for the mindset of the Putin administration, and for him particularly, because he learned after many years of trying to get closer to the West, trying to work with them, trying to negotiate with them, he said, that's enough, that's not working anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, departure from the West already started in 2014 because everybody understood they were trying to accomplish something which would have been incomprehensible even 10 years before that. Okay. So once it started, the problem was not with Putin actually making his kind of, you know, statement and recognizing the new reality, or for that matter, it was the recognition of the new reality even by Russian ruling class, political and economic class. There are still some strata of the imbeciles, you know, who stole many, a lot of from, you know, Russian people who still kind of, you know, just, you know, look at the West in admiration. But if you go today to Russia, you would, I've been last time, yeah, last year, I'm coming this year too, is last year when we have been to Russia, even in Moscow, I never saw anything like even during the Cold War. It's not just you know, like, well, we don't like the threats and things like that. It's a contempt of the general population towards both West as general and to many Westerners who are bearers of this ideology, globalists, Atlanticists, you know, NATO and things like that. It's contempt. It's unprecedented. It never happened in Russian history. If you start reading War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy, first dozens of pages are all in French. This was the Russian society, high end society in 1805. They spoke in French. They barely could speak Russian. So, and then of course everything changes. And this what happened here is on a much larger scale. And the question now that Russia made a historic millennium long decision, it's over. And Russia's fates are in Eurasia, essentially, and all over the world, you know, and especially when you begin to look at how the what is called Global South views Russia. There you go.
Yeah. When it comes to the conflict in Ukraine, before this summit, we had summit in Switzerland, Zelensky summit in Switzerland. It was so
Yeah.
funny. And before, right before this summit, Putin made something so unusual during the last 2 years. We had summit in Saudi Arabia, all of these talks, and he didn't do anything. Right now, he decided to put out some preconditions for any sort of negotiations if the West is serious to go after a negotiating table. In this condition, he asked to Ukrainian army to withdraw their troops from Donetsk, Lugansk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia regions.
Yeah.
And the other condition was to just declaring Kiev, declaring that they're not going to be part of NATO officially.
Yeah.
And what was important, he was mentioning the negotiation in Istanbul, that he wanted to build, he was Istanbul plus. It means that it's changing,
Yeah.
something else. And the crucial point that was so smart, in my opinion, that would be so dark for the West. He said that he's gonna change. These conditions are not constant are they're gonna change as time goes by, as the face of the war is changing in Ukraine. How did you find this type of strategy, this type of vision on the part of Putin before the summit in Switzerland?
Well, he obviously being Vladimir Putin, the head of the nuclear and economic superpower, he definitely spoiled the agenda in Switzerland, and they never signed any communique on the document because there's nothing to sign really there. But what many people do not often overlook is that for the last 2 years, whenever or 2.5 years, whenever Putin was speaking about anything related to some kind of the settlement, the key phrase was always omitted, but it is there and it's into your face in every single proposition. And it's called considering the real situation on the ground. And there you go. So everybody understood that he did peremptory, essentially, you know, the statement. And it was about basically ultimatum to the West, or rather, last warning. And yeah, that's Vladimir Putin. It's kind of known pattern throughout 20 plus years of him in power that each next offer by Putin will be much worse than the previous one. And like today, he comes out and says, no, we don't need Kharkov, which is obvious. We don't need to attack or take it. Why would we need it? But yeah, we are there and we will stay there. And why would stay there? To annihilate whatever the NATO will be throwing at, you know, using the diminishing cannon fodder of Ukraine, armed forces of Ukraine, or whatever it is now. And so yeah, the next if they don't understand what is happening, then Russians will be talking already from the Nikolaev region and saying, you know what, let's talk to on very different conditions. And there you go, that's what is happening.
In your opinion, if Russia goes further and captures Odessa, Nikolaev, Dnepropetrovsk, these cities that are so important right now, it seems to be the next step would be these three cities in the south. And what would happen in if Russia takes these cities and the administration in the United States and in Ukraine and Europe together with European decide to negotiate with Russia?
Well,
In
it will be, yeah. It will be how practically stated recently, as you mentioned, just when Putin stated before this so-called peace conference. Yeah, it will be. Here's the reality on the ground. Take it or leave it. That's negotiations. It's not about settling some terms. It's about what conditions Russia imposes. You don't like it? Take it or leave it. And there you go. There will be no peace conference. There will be surrender, official surrender. And it is very important that actually it will be not about Ukraine. Ukraine is finished. It's not functional state. It lives only because West you know, continues to give it money. And again, it disintegrates. It's the poorest country in, oh my God, it's dirt poor now. And of course, we can see the social catastrophe there, cultural, social, what have you. So in this case, yeah, what are you gonna do? What? They don't have any means. They don't have any force they want to counter it. So, and yeah, what are the options? They don't have any options. They have only option to, for example, if they decide to do it like next week, they call Kremlin and say, hey, let's negotiate and this and that. And Putin says, yeah, you know the conditions. There's no negotiation. These are realities. Remove whatever's left of your forces, which they are NATO forces. They are run from Rammstein and from Pentagon. And so, yeah. What do you expect? If not, then it will continue, you know? So
Yeah.
Russia has all means and resources to do this for years.
We know that none of the BRICS countries supported this final declaration. That's a huge sign on the part of BRICS that they're not supporting these type
Yeah.
of summits.
Well, it's simple. BRICS is it's not even the rudimentary anymore. It is emerging alternative to the United Nations. So, and it's obvious. It's the new, completely new economic, cultural, and security configuration globally, not just, regional way. So BRICS is not a regional organization, it's global. And now when we have Indonesia, you have Thailand, you have, Arab countries, joining in. Now Saudi is dropping dollar in their trade, with oil and things of this nature. It's a tectonic historic shift. There is nothing which equates it in terms of how the basically new world order is emerging. And so in this case, yeah, why would you support something which everybody saw what United States is militarily? So yeah, the record, is the, Cuba Gooding Jr. in the whatever the name of the movie says, show me the money. You want to have claims to something, show your war records. And we know America's war records. One lost war after another for all this, fluffy talk about how great they are. And, it's very simple. But then suddenly you have the situation that even the fact that I have to admit, I was absolutely surprised in a good sense, essentially. Not that I like the guys, I don't like them at all. It's not my people. But Taliban was in the special, in the St. Petersburg International Forum. It was amazing. They came there, and Lavrov already stated, and Ryabkov already stated. So it's essentially everybody knows that Russia will recognize them because obviously nobody wants Afghan people, to suffer or to go hungry and everything. So and Russia was already providing a very large quantities of humanitarian aid, and suddenly you have Taliban coming to talk economy. And can you imagine? Afghanistan actually is a gold mine of minerals and resources and things like that. Taliban understands that, and they also understand you do not want United States or any Western country inside the country, in their own country. So who gives? As Russians will be talking to Taliban on equal basis again. They will not come to say pointing them, out somewhere. Of course, there are huge cultural differences. There is the issue of the treatment of women. There's the issue of the bourgeoisie, horrendous culture, and things of this nature. Russians make it known. They tell Taliban, we don't like it, but here's the deal. Here's what we're doing. We don't want you guys to suffer and the country going to hell, yet again. So in this case, if this is the force which can control the country and bring it to some sense of order, which evidently is kind of happening, then so be it, And people see it. And when they look at this, it's like, yeah, we want breaks, So of course they want.
Yeah. One of the things that in this summit happened was the president of Finland talking about complaining that Russia invaded his country during the Second World War and captured 10% of its territory. And he didn't mention that they were helping Nazis, that they were supporting Nazis in that war. And right after the war, Russia returned that territory to Finland. And when you look at the level of talking in this summit, it's unbelievable, Andrei. It you see that even if he knew that they were helping Nazis, that's why Russia invaded his country, why he would say that, in your opinion, in this summit?
Well, because first, most of them don't know history, for example, at all. Then you have the people who have all kind of bloodlines to people who, have been indeed like Mr. Habeck, economy minister of of Germany. His roots are his relatives have been devoted Nazis. And fact is, his grandfather, I believe he was not grandfather, I believe, not their uncle, but grandfather. He was a close friend of Goebbels. So yeah, what do you expect? They all come out, they give these interviews that, oh, well, yeah, we reassess this and that, and no, you didn't. So they lied, that's what they did. The Cold War was about rewriting the World War II. They continue to do it today. And so United States officially is supporting now Azov Nazi battalion, not battalions, brigade actually, and it's actually more than brigade, it's the whole structure, even with its own intelligence services and things like that. They support Nazis. Yeah, what do you expect? So there you go. And whatever they talk, they, yeah, West is done. West is done, it's over. And one of the reasons for that is not only they are being Islamized, you know, and they do provide continuously the replacement of the population. This replacement, especially, you know, it breeds their what discontent. As the result, you get back those radical ideas, you know, which including the National Socialism or fascism. So it's inevitable. And especially because now when you look at Europeans, what's left of Europe, European men have been completely emasculated. They're nobodies. They're correctly called cocks, you know, basically. They will applaud if somebody rapes their daughter or, you know, wife. This is the level of the Europeans today. And now they talk about Finland. Yeah, they supported Nazis. They fought for Nazis. Yeah, what can I say? And they don't like this history. Well, too bad. It's in records. They, I mean, it's a whole other story. But yeah, they will be admired, especially in Washington.
Yeah. The other thing that was unbelievable was what Duda was talking about, the president of Poland. We know after 2 years of this, more than 2 years of this conflict in Ukraine, you look at the Russian army, you look at the Russian economy, and he comes considering all of that, and he comes and saying that we have to decolonize Russia, we have to break it down in federations with these ethnic groups, and it's unbelievable. Yeah. It seems that this was supposed to be a peace summit, and right now it seems that they're making new conflicts within a peace summit instead of talking
yeah.
about peace, a solution for what's going on in Ukraine. It's supposed to be like this. They didn't invite Russia, but at least you have to try. You have to show the world that you are looking for some sort of solution. But it doesn't seem that they understand. They are totally disconnected with the reality.
Well, they are, and it's I'm on the record for now in the second decade that they really don't understand what is going on. Well, they sense, some of them sense, make no mistake. It doesn't mean that they are completely desensitized, you know, in terms of, you know, feeling what is going around them. I don't think so. Intellectually, they are great people. You look at Jake Sullivan or Blinken or Lloyd Austin. These are not bright people. Let me put it this way. They are not. So, and add in with Poland, throw in their traditional Russophobia and their traditional, what they call gonar, which is of course, you know, ambition and delusions of grandeur. So, and they think that they matter. They don't really, militarily, economically, they are pipsqueak really. So, and the only thing is the desperation. You know, it's, yeah, it, I believe it was, I didn't watch it, but it was Tucker Carlson and Glenn Greenwald in their interviews, I mean, communications recently, like a few days ago, when they started to discuss this, you know, situation, why the British journalists are vicious scumbags. They are vicious. They are, I mean, low life, you know. Most of them are, you know, from Piers, you know, Morgan, whatever the hell the name of the guy, to pretty much anybody who works for, you know, forget tabloids, but all of them are tabloids in Great Britain. And I believe it was Glenn who stated, well, because they understand they are nobodies. It's very difficult to come to terms that you are really nobody. Great Britain is a pathetic country now. You know, it's same goes for Poland. So, and eventually Poland, I don't know what the process is there. I mean, they will be also, you know, they will get all those European values, you know, imposed on them. And you know where it all leads. So basically they're white Christian folks stopping from procreation, you know. So there you go. And that explains it. And Poles are like that. They thought about, you know, their idea about this empire, as they call it, from Morze to Morze, which is means from sea to sea, from Baltic Sea to, you know, Black Sea and things of this nature. But these were Russians who stopped, you know, from having this, defeating them. But then again, Finns do not even understand they would be still working their turnips fields for Swedes, if not for Russia, who essentially gave Finland their statehood. So yeah, let them do whatever they do. They talk a lot. So yeah, sure, let them talk.
How do you see the situation with F-16s right now? They're talking about sending F-16s. Then they changed their mind. Right now, they're talking about F-16s again. Do you think that at the end of the day, they would send F-16s to Ukraine? It seems to me that it is not possible to keep them, to put them inside Ukraine because Russia is going to hit them, and they have to keep them in Romania, in Poland. That would be hugely problematic for the conflict.
Yeah. Well, I believe it was one of those Ukrainian so-called leaders, Podolyak, whatever the hell they have to. I don't even pay attention to them anymore. Yeah. So he came up like yesterday or say, oh, yeah, we're going to store those F-16s on the territory of Ukraine. Sure. So much good will they do, huh? I guess. So, yeah, it doesn't matter. And as already stated, it's if it comes down and Russia has all capabilities to identify, well, pretty much even the aircraft when it is in the on the runway in Netherlands. Forget about Poland or Romania, because Russians have this really little, well, it's not little actually, it's huge over the horizon radar, which sees everything on the ground, not only in the air but on the ground, up to 3,000 kilometers range. So it will be known who flies where and how. So if Romania and Poland want to get it, they will get it. So the Russia has plenty of the standoff weapons, and Russians already, they know that there will be no Article 5. Well, probably Article 5 will be invoked, but it will get nowhere. But nobody wants to fight Russia in reality.
Andrei, Norwegian Prime Minister is talking about Norway, Sweden, and Finland have agreed to create a military transport corridor through the northern parts of their territory to ensure the rapid transfer of troops and equipment. Do you understand why they're talking about this right now? What's the reason behind this? Why they do need such a thing?
Purely for internal consumption, to show the brainwashed, primarily European population, that something is being done about this Russian threat, or for and project that they're strong and unified to the outside world. Nobody buys this anymore, this BS, which they project. So, and militarily, as I already stated, they are militarily pipsqueaks. Those Scandinavian countries, they can create whatever the corridor they want. Again, this is not 1965, okay? Every movement, Russia has enough intelligence assets to know pretty much who, how, and moves where. So it's, yeah, let them create this corridor if they want to, sure. How many troops can they move through this corridor? About if they will be able to get the whole international, Sweden, Norway, Finland brigade. Good luck with this, So when they will face the Leningrad, reconstituted Leningrad military district, I don't think so they're gonna like it at all, So in this case, it's all primarily PR to show that, they demonstrate that we're doing something, we have military forces and all things of this nature. Sure, let them.
Yeah. Do you think that we can see the conflict right now as this at this stage, at this particular moment in two ways? One of them would be these preconditions on the part of Putin, this peace summit that we saw that they're rejecting in the West, that they're not willing to negotiate. And on the other hand, we see that they're not sending F-16s. They're so cautious, it seems to me, to send these weapons. Do you see they're looking for some sort of escalations, or they're trying to just continue this war for the sake of 2024 presidential election in the United States? Just they don't care what's happening right now to Ukrainians.
No, absolutely not. Don't forget, we Slavs from Washington elite are subhumans. You have to understand that. So if you go to Pentagon or any town or whatever you State Department, we are subhumans. So and they treated us like this always. So that's the only, this is the level of the culture of the American elite. They are the only thing they have this, So in this particular case, they don't care how many Ukrainians will be killed. The only thing they will understand them when they will be charged with the war crimes and crimes against humanity is Nazi war criminals have been done, and that's coming, and there will be names or large big names in American politicum. So as per F-16, no, it's not. You see, they don't want to see those F-16s being shut down because they will be flown by the NATO pilots. You see, that's the thing. And there was a number of the articles, including the, like Defense One and things of this nature, that Wall Street Journal and New York Times, that Ukrainians are incapable to fly, fly those airplanes, which of course inevitably brings us to the option of putting their NATO pilots. If they have any brains left, those NATO pilots, they know what's going to expect them. It's a one-way ticket. So, and if you're shut down, pray to God that you get, and taken POW by Russians. They will feed you. They will provide you good, medical care, unlike it will be the case in Ukraine. So, yeah, there's a huge PR issue there. So, and they need continue to, again, present or project outward that they are, how to say it, unified, mighty, they're trying to do something. But former Inspector General of NATO troops, European NATO troops, huge, it's commander in chief essentially. General Kuyat of Bundeswehr, that Bundeswehr, the old Bundeswehr when they were extremely serious military force, he went on record recently. 2 or 3 days ago, and he stated that actually United States is desperately looking some kind of the settlement to crawl out of this whole situation, and they want actually to de-escalate. But because you have to understand, as any bully who is big on mouth and very weak, in a psychological sense, and very often even in the physical sense, which is exactly what has happened to Washington, they will continue to, talk big. We're going to send F-16. No, let's send, F-15. Let's send whatever, International Space Station there. Let's show them those damn Ruskies. And because, well, we have to understand also that people who vote for this type of people, they are not really bright. I mean, let's put it this way. And it's like, people of South Carolina vote in the war criminal and cretin, Lindsey Graham. I understand there are many people, for example, in South Carolina who are very decent folks. They're wonderful Americans, they're wonderful patriots. But look at this. No matter how they boo the guy, guess what? He ends up in the Senate. And he's a war criminal. He's a terrorist, essentially. And when you look at the entity, that's you cannot change this machine. They will continue to generate this hot gas. They will try to project themselves as, big and strong, which they are not. And so we will continue to hear this rhetoric. And many of them, as I already stated, they hate Russian gods. They would love Russian people to die in big quantities. So there are many people like this in CIA, there are in Pentagon, in State Department, certainly. So, and yeah, this is what happens.
Yeah. The Serbian president in an interview, he has predicted that we're gonna have a world war in 3 to 4 months. Do you think what's the reason behind this prediction? Does he know anything? Does he know something that we are not aware of?
No, he doesn't know anything. Vucic, yeah, he is just, he's a political animal. Look at the Serbian government. Serbia is done. Russians are done with Serbia because they basically continue to elect their, well, people who, let's put it this way, not friendly to Russia, to put it mildly. So, yeah, let them. No, Vucic knows absolutely nothing. He's nobody, and you know, he is, well, sadly, I have to admit that Serbs probably will be upset, but he's the head of the very insignificant country, which really now made itself completely dependent on the West, and it is what it is. What can you say? You know, so you know, he is BSing people, so it's complete crap.
John Kirby, in his last talk with the press, he said that Ukraine has to win the war with Russia to join NATO. He's just sending a signal to Ukrainian government that they're not going to be at the end of the day part of NATO because they know that they cannot win the conflict, they cannot win the war. Or they're trying to convince them to fight even harder, in your opinion.
Well, they want them to fight even harder. That means what? Killing even more people on the Ukrainian side. And John Kirby is as admirable as I am the woman, you know. So the guy has no clue what he's talking about. He knows how to spin. That's pretty much it. He has absolutely zero military academic background, and that's how he became admiral. It's evidently it's possible now, you know. So, but point is, yeah. He basically, people laugh at him. He is the second Jen Psaki, sort of, you know, more vicious though, but I mean, yeah, he is the same level. Or Karine Jean-Pierre, they are all stupid there, so, and illiterate pretty much. He is his wet dreams, he projects, you know, so, and he, as I already stated, they want, you know, Ukraine to go to full mobilization mode. That means what? Kids from 17 years and old and women. And again, Ukrainians for them are subhumans, so they don't care.
Financial Times reported that Russia overtook the United States in gas supplies to Europe in May, despite having all these difficulties. And this shows how important Russia is for Europe, for the security of Europe. At the end of the day, if they want to accept it or not, it doesn't change the fact that he's on the ground right now. And its decision would be on the part of Europeans. They want to get it. They want to receive the Russian gas directly or indirectly from Turkey or even India. That would be because Turkey can manipulate these prices if it goes to Turkey and then to European Union. With the new changes that are happening in the European Union, do you think they would consider the necessity of having a direct relationship between Europe and Russia, or they're just the same as Meloni and nothing gonna change?
No, nothing gonna change. There are no political forces in Europe which are not Atlantist and are not globalist. So they will continue to, United States will tell them to jump. They will ask how high. Some will pretend that they kind of resist, but no, it's over. For Europe, it's over. So, and as I already stated at the start of the special military operation, Putin and Mr. Novak at that time, and many others said, okay, Europe doesn't buy this gas that, you know, basically frees a lot of volume, which will be transferred to Asia. And guess what? It is being transferred to Asia. So eventually, Europe, I mean, it's their problems. So the only thing Russia will be kind of looking at, because if you have hungry and stupid Europeans running around, if they kill each other there in Europe, it's one thing, let them, you know. But if they will also bring about some birth of some, you know, Hitler 2.0, I don't think so. It is in any way serious, but still, then Russia should be worried in the sense that it should be, you know, basically extinguished from the get-go, not like it was when Stalin, obviously totally different times, already in 1933 he knew who Hitler was. So, and yeah, that's what it is. Europe is done. I mean, they wanted it, let them have it, you know. So I have no sympathy. I have sympathy for simple people who are suffering from this, obviously, you know, economic calamity, but Europe will get much, much poorer. And essentially, you will forget about the, well, they still have some infrastructure which stays there from their first world status, as they call themselves, but eventually that will dissipate too. They simply don't have resources for that. And Hey, when you have Mr. Burrell, and the guy is, well, probably when he drinks, then he is not a complete globalist, but he's globalist, and he comes out like last year and he says the only reason we lived that well for 50 years because of the Soviet and Russian energy. That's it. So simple as that. Even he understands.
Seems so disappointing when you see in the European Union they are just waiting to see what Washington wants them to do. And if we know and if Trump wins, that he has a great chance of winning the 2024. And he said that he's gonna end the conflict in Ukraine in 24 hours.
No, it's not going to change anything.
No.
Trump is in the pocket of Adelson's widow, and Adelson was his main provider, so to speak, before. He is completely in the pocket of the Zionists in the United States and the Israeli lobby, and he will do a stall. He's a lot of hot air. I mean, so, and Putin, in some sense, while making joke, he also wasn't kind of not joking, because when he said we prefer Mr. Biden, which was kind of black mark on him. But the point is, Trump, don't forget again, who completely destroyed Russian-American relations. It was Trump. Even Obama wouldn't go that far, but it was Trump who absolutely wrecked it, including the diplomacy between Russia and United States, and he was the guy actually on whose watch Ukraine started to get those weapons and training in their like massive quantities. So yeah, the guy, he likes to talk, he's full of what. So then, yeah, for those people who think that anything's gonna change, nothing gonna change. He will do as told by Israeli lobby, and very many people among neocons and Israeli lobby don't like Russians. They just hate Russian gods, So, yeah, there's not going to be any change.
Yeah. We know that recently United States has offered Saudi Arabia with a defense treaty. And right now we've learned that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, he was attacking Netanyahu for what he's doing, for what Netanyahu is doing in Gaza. This is the first time he's attacking, that he's saying that we have to hold Netanyahu accountable for what he's doing right now. It doesn't seem that the United States strategy is working with the Saudi Arabia. It seems that they're just Saudi Arabia, they're just making their mind, that they're just understanding what's going on between BRICS and G7, between United States on one side and Russia and China on the other side.
First, I was surprised myself. I never knew that when I read the piece by Dr. Khadra Kumar, who, Indian diplomat, when he described Khashoggi, this journalist who was murdered, he was murdered, not assassinated, by Saudis, that he was actually CIA asset. I'm like, oh, okay, then now it's all basically, the puzzle, pieces of puzzle kind of, fit in. So yeah, that already told you their essentially their intentions of Ben Salman. And he's kind of interesting guy. I mean, definitely, he certainly has a good relations with Mr. Putin, no doubt about it. And he's not stupid, he understands that he has to break a lot of things in the Saudi society, which will not happen if Saudi continues to be attached, through petrodollar to the United States. So he does this, maneuver now, and suddenly, and United States strategy again, United States doesn't have strategy. United States didn't have strategy for the last at least 50 years. I mean, they were lucky that Soviet Union collapsed because it wasn't strategy. Russians stupidly believed the West. But other than that, it then never was strategy. You have to win, okay? And so suddenly you have the situation that Saudis understand that they will be kept in the dark ages forever, just being provided through the recycling of the dollars. And buying treasuries, when in reality, even this failed enterprise by Ben Salman of this Lime City, Well, it's stupid, of course. You know, everybody understood who have any brains that it's not going to work and it's going to be a waste of money. But even that, he was trying to create, you know, this tourist base in Saudi Arabia. And there are other things which are happening. And he will not be able to do it when he has only US dollars. And, you know, so, and suddenly it's becoming quite obvious that Eurasia, when you look at Eurasia itself, the whole continental mass, it's absolutely packed with the resources, and which will be enough to last humanity for several hundred years, you know, in coming. So, well, guess what? If you want to develop, really to develop, you know, things, you better look at for BRICS. And obviously, the military alliance, which was offered by the United States. Oh, come on. In 2019, we all remember how those wonderful Patriot Pact 3 with the American crews couldn't catch a single freaking Houthi slow drones, you know, which attacked Aramco facilities. Now we saw actually great success, quote unquote, I'm being facetious, of course, of the US Navy and all those NATO navies while fighting the power which doesn't have Navy, you know, Houthis, which shut down practically the Red Sea shipping lanes of communications. The shipping is down 90%. It's unbelievable. So you have the whole world is basically going. If you sit in Washington, you suddenly begin to recognize that everything you did and everything you knew doesn't matter. The whole world around you goes to hell, in your opinion, you know. And well, there you go. Salman is definitely smarter than many people who offer him those deals, you know. So, and that's what happened.
How did you find this attack of Netanyahu on the Biden and on Biden and his administration before going to the United States? We know that Biden was helping, was supporting him. Right now, he's asking for more weapons. And what's the problem, in your opinion? What's the difference? What's going on between the Biden administration and Netanyahu administration that made him to make these comments about Biden and his administration?
Well, because IDF is being humiliated in all its military endeavors, because it's all propaganda by Zionist lobby here in the United States about how great Israelis were, you know. So they don't understand that Israelis of 67 and 1973 had a huge Soviet military component to them in command corps, people who graduated Russian military, Soviet military academies. Today, it's you saw yourself who they are, and they got really mauled in Gaza, and they continue to do. That's the only thing they know how to do, you know, kill civilians. So, and even Biden, you know, had at some point of time to do something. But as I already stated, the United States is a slap bitch for Israel. That's basically extension of the Israel in terms of foreign policy. So Biden will be told, will do what as told. But Netanyahu has to ask for more weapons because Israel, of course, if you look attentively at economically, Israel is ruined right now. They literally, I mean, come on, it's a small country. It's much smaller than Moscow in population, for example. And they cannot produce all that on their own. So who was the main supporter? Look at them, F-35. F-15s, you know, all kinds of those, you know, F-16s. This is all the American hardware, except for the Merkavas and some of this, you know, even the, you know, Iron Dome and all those, you know, other more anti-ballistic systems. They are Boeing and Raytheon, for crying out loud. And so Israel, as itself, military, it's a pipsqueak. The only thing which they have there is the ability to wreak havoc in Lebanon and, you know, elsewhere, like in Gaza. And they have, yeah, they have nuclear weapons. That's about it. I mean, militarily, they are not significant. There was a lot of talk because of their, you know, well, Hollywood and all those people who own United States who are bound to Israel and Israeli lobby. So they were making these propaganda moves about how great this army is. It's not. And we already saw how Israel lost completely. I mean, Netanyahu, I agree with Scott Ritter. Netanyahu is destroying Israel. Oh, come on, let's face it. Yeah. He's destroying Israel. And but again, those people, they are maniacs. I mean, they don't understand what they do. And they actually, I think Netanyahu is in panic mode too, you know. So he's becoming Zelensky 2.0. So he begs for weapons and things like that. So, well, Biden will oblige. He will be coerced to do this. So, and believe me, when they have the what is it, debates between Biden and Trump, which will be a sight to behold. Okay, I probably have to record it. I mean, popcorn, and but I think so. That's primarily will be about who of them loves Israel more. Mark my word, that will be about who loves Israel more.
That would be Trump.
Yeah, that
It
will be
seems
Trump.
to
Yeah, so
me.
that will be the essence of the debates, you know. So they will put it in economic issue. They will put it in foreign policy issue. That will be all about Israel. So that will be very interesting to observe. And that's another point. The rest of the world doesn't care anymore, you know. So in pretty much, and as this dynamics of BRICS shows. So yeah, eventually United Nations will have to be also disbanded in the form it exists, because it's a completely corrupt organization. Together it will have to be also disposed of, like International Olympic Committee or World Health Organization, all those human rights garbage, you know. So yeah, that's pretty much the change of the guard, if you wish, you know. So we are already in the multipolarity, we are already in the completely non-West dominated world, despite the fact that West some still wield some influences, primarily through its institutions and coercions. Militarily, their bluff has been called already a long time ago. So, and there you go. That's what we are facing today.
Andre, just before wrapping up, I think if BRICS let Palestine in, that would hugely benefit Palestine and future of Palestine. We know that UN Security Council is not working, is not going to
No,
work
it's
for Palestine. BRICS that is growing, that is hugely important. That would be hugely important for the future of Palestine.
Don't forget, Russian Federation recognizes Palestine. So yeah, politically it will be a huge, atomic explosion. So there is a lot of going on. I am not sometimes able to even, keep up with this, because it's absolutely insane. I never encountered anything like this in my life. It's just insane. We're looking at the world, which is changing daily. Forget about months or daily. It was yesterday one world. Today Putin. Yesterday Putin goes to North Korea. Now in Vietnam. Then it's he will be in Almaty. I mean, in Kazakhstan. It's like, boy, and each time something happens, and you're like, oh, this new reality. So there you go.